board meeting. All three select board members are present, as is Steve Halloran. And we have several members of the public who are also on via Zoom. So I think the first order of business should be getting a chair for this group, should it not?
Either that or public comment, however you want to go around.
Let's get a chair.
Do you nominate someone?
Well, the usual process has been the person who is in the last year of his or her term, and that is Rob. So I do nominate Rob to serve as chair for this year.
It needs to be second.
Is there a second?
I second that.
All right, discussion. All in favor, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Congratulations, Rob.
Thanks a lot. It's a real privilege and a pleasure. So I think, did you want to do public comment first, or how do you want to proceed, Rob?
Yeah, do you want to roll that around to me?
I can roll that around to you, Rob.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, out there, Plainfield Nation. So thank you very much, Ron. Job well done. You're next. Eric will be chair next year. So at this point in the meeting, we will open it up for public comment. Looks like we do have members of the public in attendance. We know who, let's see, we got four people we can see. There is one person that seems to have dialed in by telephone. Can that person identify themselves?
All right, Nancy Norwalk.
Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Thank you so much. So we're going to open it up, and if any of you has anything they want to say right now, you can kind of raise your hand and show me. And we can let you talk. And if nobody wants to talk, we can certainly get into the heart of the agenda. So open it up to the public. Looks like Bev.
Yeah, I was wondering, has the town come up with a family emergency leave policy given the COVID-19? There is a posting that came out today that has to go, it's required to go on the bulletin boards. And I wondered if you had a policy to go along with it.
I think that will be actually a good subject for something to be discussed tonight. I know that the sort of in the intervening, what's it been, probably 16, 18 days since our last meeting, it really has become obviously top of everybody's mind. So we'll be talking about that tonight, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, to talk about, because the governor, like you said, has just issued the order for stay at home for non-essentials. So we're going to have to sort of have some conversations about the highway guys. The highway guys are sort of essential when it's snowing or if there's disaster on one of our roads, but maybe they could be furloughed temporarily for, I know that's what Hanover and Lebanon have done. We need to talk about the town office. Steve, bring us up to speed on that. But I think, thank you, Bev, for bringing it up. We'll be talking about it. Do you have it on the agenda, actually, or do you want to?
Well, we just received guidance today from Primax on it. So it may actually be booted to the next meeting, but it's, you know, at the moment we haven't had a call for it. I'm not even sure we have. I think we have one employee who has young children at this point.
Yep.
And he has been at work so far, and I think his wife is home with the family. So we will work on that. But as I say, we just received guidance today from RIMAX.
Yeah.
I think they provided.
It does. The posting does say that the Emergency Leave Act goes into effect at the beginning of April. So you have a limited time to work on that.
Right. And the governor, I've been made aware that the governor just this afternoon made his proclamation of a stay at home and a closure of non-essential business order that came out today at about 3 o'clock, as far as I know. And that is set to take effect tomorrow night, Friday night at 11:59 p.m. So, I mean, the end of this week is sort of the end of business as usual. And I think we've got to have some discussion about going forward, how we would like to handle that. So we can do that now, or what are the other two selectmen, you want to have that discussion now, or do you want to get into the heart of our agenda and save it for a little bit later on in the meeting? What's your question?
Let's do the rest of public comment.
Okay. So thank you, Bev. We'll definitely be addressing that a little bit later on. Looks like Mike Sutherland raised his hand.
Just, I was watching the governor on Channel 9 as the group was gathering, and there almost everything is essential, according to what he said. It'll be quite interesting. I think it's going to be left to the individual jurisdictions to decide what they want to do, but the governor has declared everything, including gun stores, to be essential. So,
yeah, that's a very interesting thing. We'll have to, when we get to that a little bit later on, I have some thoughts on that. I know that it's obviously going to affect me at my job as well. You know, you could make arguments that this job and that job are essential, but basically I think if there's ways that we can accommodate people staying home, at least temporarily, we should try to. So, but we'll talk about that. Thank you, Mike, for your comment. Any other general public comment from the group? There being none. Nancy, you trying to say something?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay. So let's see. The next item on the agenda, Steve Hallen, you want to bring us up to speed?
I think Paul will be in shortly. As you know, we've had some discussions with Jim McCarragher. Stephanie Schell is out every day while I'm working with her population. So far, what we have is a lot of people willing to do whatever they need to do, but no one asking us to do much of anything. So that's sort of the COVID-19 town response update, in the sense that I think we are prepared. Stephanie is prepared for whatever folks needs. And I think, you know, the biggest offer so far has come from Singing Hills in terms of they are willing to provide housing for any first responders that need to be quarantined that don't want to go home to their homes, but yet they would still be local in town. And they're also willing to do meals for anybody that needs meals. You may see a thing in the next day or two. I think with the closing of Tom's Tavern and Singing Hills trying to maintain their cook staff in their kitchen, they're going to actually be offering meals to the community on a donation basis if people want them. In terms of, well, we're waiting for Paul, and I think he's coming, but not 100% sure. We've had a request from Peter Decato, who is settling the estate of Barbara Decato. I think it is a different Decato, not related. It's a trailer in the Meriden Trailer Park that has been abandoned and needs to be removed. And so it's been a long process for the owner of the park to get court authority to remove it because it's private property owned by another. But that process has happened, and Barry Schuster is prepared a document that would have us release our back taxes that are due on it. It's a very small amount of money, $1,500 or $1,600. And there really is no prospect for getting that money back. And so Barry's advice after talking to Peter is that we release it so that there's no liens on the trailer and they can destroy it. As long as you guys agree to that, I have a document here for two of you to sign.
Any discussion on that? Ron, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, it sounds okay to me.
Eric? Sounds good to me. Okay, all pass right. That around. We'll sign that. Need a motion on that or just need signatures?
If I just get signatures, that'll be fine. So.
Steve, I didn't realize you were leaving the virus discussion. I just want to circle back a little bit. Do you feel confident? I mean, I know that Stephanie is even before this is pretty much well aware of what's going on in the community and who needs what. I'm wondering, you know, at least one town across the river from us has set up volunteers in the neighborhoods. So that everybody on every road, they divide it up geographically, gets a call or a check-in, you know, just to make sure that, you know, are they doing okay? Do they need anything? And do we feel, I mean, it would take some effort to set it up and get, you know, put out there, whether on Facebook or on our website or on Neighbor to Neighbor.
I think that's already happening with Stephanie checking the most vulnerable, and Paul has his officers checking with folks that are on his list almost on a daily basis, certainly on an every couple of day basis. Sergeant Sweat just mentioned that to me yesterday in a conversation that he had been having. So I think we've got it covered. I mean, no one knows what next week's going to bring, and the week after that and the week after that. But at the moment, I mean, we do have a large pool of people, Ron, that are willing to be involved. They just have not, had a call to do much yet. I mean, Stephanie has been running some errands for people and doing some food pantry work, but she does that anyways.
Okay.
I just wondered if people are out there that we aren't aware of that might be struggling with the isolation and the loneliness. And I think that may be what Ron is bringing up. It's some people, you know, are scared to go get their groceries. I had somebody call me and say, is the only time I can go between 5:30 a.m. and 6:30 a.m. So I think the more we can reach out, I think Ron, you're on, I think you've got a good idea. I think we've got a lot of caring neighbors that are out there, and I think we ought to start reaching out if we can.
Yeah, so I think, why don't we lump this all together in a COVID-19 discussion that we'll have later in the meeting. I think this is good. I agree with you guys. I think that some kind of a volunteer effort to maybe do some checking in. We did that, maybe 10 years ago when we had a really bad power outage in Plainfield Village. We actually assembled a group of volunteers to go around door to door, although I think this situation would probably not call for the door to door contact, maybe trying to phone people or just kind of going up and down the streets in terms of like a call bank and make sure we check in on people. Because I think if you actually went and knocked on people's doors, you might scare the living daylights out of them with this whole viral thing. So.
Right.
But we'll talk about that more a little bit later on in the meeting, if that's okay. Further agenda items, Steve.
Meriden Covered Bridge. Are we comfortable awarding that work to Modern Protective Coatings?
So we had a discussion at the last meeting. We also had a quick meeting around the time of the town voting when we were setting up, I think it was, right after that?
I think it was Friday morning after we met with the contractor, yes.
Right. And we had a presentation from him. He seems like an absolute first-class operation. My feeling is thus. We have had contact with three separate contractors who have each come out to inspect our bridge and given us their recommended course of repairs on the bridge. Of the three, the gentleman that we're currently considering seems to be, I think, the most reasonable in terms of cost. He has the earliest availability. He's actually available now. He is not charging us for the landing costs. He seems to be able to do the work that we need with the most efficiency. So I'm really happy with awarding him the contract to do the work, and I think it's going to be done very professionally and very quickly and at a very reasonable cost, somewhere in the vicinity of, what do we think, is $90,000?
Right. Well, if you guys decide you want to replace the deck, which I think you do because it makes the project much better in terms of doing the encapsulating all of the steel and zinc, then you add about another $9,000. So we would be probably, the whole project would be about $100,000. But I think it's work that we are done with the Meriden Covered Bridge for the rest of our lifetimes, and someone else will decide what to do with it in the future. You know, there's going to be other maintenance on the bridge, the wood part of the bridge. We're always knocking boards off it. We've got a cedar shingle roof that's 30 years old now, and that sort of thing. But the absolute most pressing thing is the steel underneath, and I think we have an opportunity to get this guy here. I don't know what today's action will do for that. He's ready to start work next week, and the reality is, in a time when the town is shut down, is a pretty nice time to do the bridge, because with KUA, a lot of the folks that run into the village every day are going because of KUA, and they're going to be forced to drive around.
And you've made contact already with the most affected residents of Colby Hill?
Yeah, we actually extended the letter that we mailed to everybody on Columbus Jordan and up over the hill to the point where it wouldn't make sense to be coming down over the bridge anyways. And so people are aware. I think they'll still be surprised, but they are aware that the job could start as early as April 1st. And if we are replacing the wooden deck, you're probably talking about the month of April. Is the reality of the project. But, you know, again, it's, some of it is out of our hands now in terms of what can or can't be done. But, you know, Scott Royston of Modern Protective Coatings is ready to accept the work and get going if, as long as he can get going, you know, in terms of essential work and that sort of thing. But the issue is if there's votes on the board to do that, we can go ahead and authorize that work and get it started.
Okay, so let's go to Ron. What are your feelings on this project, Ron?
Yeah, I would mirror what you said. And also, after we met with a contractor, I, you know, looked at some of the writings of what they do and what they have done. And they do seem to be solid, and people have been pleased with their work. And I think, given that we've spoken to three different places, that I would vote to move ahead with this.
Okay, thanks, Ron. Eric?
I concur.
Eric is a concur. Any thoughts from the general public in attendance?
No.
Okay, looks like we've got support for the, you need a purchase order or anything like that signed? Or
I'll have to talk to Scott and work. Well, there'll be a contract and things for Barry to review, but mostly just whether we were a go. And it sounds like you're happy to get him started. If
should we have a motion?
Definitely a motion.
I'm looking for a motion. Ron, you want to make a motion on that?
I move that we go ahead with the repair work to the Meriden Covered Bridge by the, remind me the name of the coating company.
Modern Protective Coating, MPC.
Modern Protective Coating, to earmark up to $100,000 for that job, including the coating the girders, the beams, and also replacing the deck.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. You've heard it from Ron to move forward on the project, the covered bridge. Is there a second?
I second that motion.
We have a second.
A little bit of discussion if we can on the
floor. Yeah, so we've got a motion on the floor. It's made and seconded. Now we're ready for discussion. Steve, go ahead.
I mean, at some point, and you don't have to do it tonight, we'll have to think about allocations of resources and what other projects. Now, obviously, we had said earlier in the year that as part of our budgeting that we probably weren't doing a paving project this year. We wanted highway to focus on ditching, tree trimming, grading, that sort of stuff. And so that this fits nicely with that. The board will have to make a decision at some point as to whether we're going to use the entire highway block grant to fund it, which is about $119,000, or whether you're going to use some of the transportation fund, which gets $55,000. That leads to then a discussion about whether we would do a small section of some road for paving. But we can, you know, obviously you're going to want to consult with Rich Collins and that sort of stuff on that. But in terms of funding, right now I'm assuming we're using the highway block grant for that. And if we did paving or some other thing, we would grab that money from the transportation fund.
I think we need to take a serious look at, instead of paving those two projects we had talked about earlier in the year,
down here on the Brook.
Either the Brook Road or the River Road, getting one of those off the to-do list. Mm-hmm. I think the, you know, despite the cost of the covered bridge and how much money's in that block, probably the River Road would be the choice, but we can make that determination later.
Okay. And again, what my intention leaving this meeting, if this motion passes, is to work out the financial arrangement with Scott and then let him, you know, if he feels his company has clearance to be working in the state of New Hampshire on a municipal project, we're going to let him go ahead and get started. The one thing we will try to do is have him coordinate with Richard the removal of the wooden deck. An important part of this job is that we want to be able to put the coating on the tops of those I-beams, and so that the entire beam is encapsulated in the zinc coating. The concern, of course, would be that if for some reason the COVID thing gets worse and they get stopped, we would want to be able to reopen the covered bridge. If we weren't replacing the deck, his work would keep the bridge open all the time. He agrees 100%. The job is much better and a much better value for the town if you let him get the tops of those five beams. And so I think what we're pledging to you is that we will try to organize the workflow in a way that if the job needs to be stopped, we can reopen the covered bridge and it doesn't have to just sit for, you know, because it's going to be a month of work to finish the covered bridge, not a month of downtime. You know, if we lose a month, and I don't think Scott, we're next on his list. I mean, his equipment is ready to be moved to the bridge site. And so we are next on his list. No matter where he goes, he's planning to come here next, as long as you guys want him to come. And so I think it's just a matter of seeing what, you know, I was hoping that we wouldn't have the order from the governor we got today, or that it would be a couple more weeks, but the bridge is going to, you know, it will flow when it happens, but we'll let him decide what authorizations he has from the state to get working. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are addressing a red listed bridge in our community. Seems like a pretty high likelihood based on Mike's comments that it will be seen as essential service. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm good. If you got one, we can work on the funding piece. We know that we have the money to do it. We can work on allocations of other projects later in the year.
Any further discussion, Ron, Eric?
Yes, sir.
Okay, motion's on the floor. Do we, are you ready for a vote? All those in favor of Ron's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Ron is an aye.
Aye.
Eric is an aye. And I'm an aye. So that's three ayes. Unanimous.
Okay.
All right, next item on the agenda.
So what I am sensing from conversations that we've had or I've had with each of you is that ordinarily you would be approving a wage and salary schedule for town employees effective April 1, but given the state of the world and the state of our budget, which is unimproved, I'm sensing the board would prefer to wait until July 1 at this point or sometime after whenever we do get a town meeting.
Yeah, so that's exactly what's happening. I work for the town of Enfield, and that's exactly what they decided there. Not to make the raises effective until there's town meeting approval of the budget, but that the raises would, the expectation is if it's approved at the town meeting, that it would be retroactive to April 1. So you're sort of, you know, you're making them whole, the employees that are affected by it, but they're sort of having to share a little bit, like you said, in the sort of, you know, this is a very interesting time that we're in. Nothing is guaranteed. And obviously, if it's not approved at town meeting, then we don't get any raises. So I think it's prudent. I mean, I know there's a little bit of extra payroll work for you guys to go back sort of retroactively and figure out how many hours people worked from April 1 to July 1, but I'm sure it can be done. So that would be my course of action. Ron, what do you think about that?
I agree for the reasons you stated.
Okay, Eric?
I agree.
So do you need a motion for that?
No, just because I think without your approval on this, it stays just the course. I'll now know what to convey to the health, because they will be asking questions about are there going to be increases for the first payroll in April, and I now have an answer. Yeah. So that's what I needed from you guys.
You know, I think to convey to the employees that you talk to, it's just, I mean, it's a very, very unusual time that we're in. This is really, I mean, we're in a state of sort of a national state of emergency.
Oh, I think we can all share that feeling.
There's really no guarantees with regard to our town budget in terms of getting passed. So I think it's prudent to not put the cart before the horse with regard to raises and just hold off.
If I may, if you don't want us to interrupt, just say so and I'll be quiet.
Oh, go ahead.
I can always mute you, Sutherland.
That's right.
I was going to ask for some feedback from you.
Well, this is also a really good example of why the town needs to consider moving to a fiscal year that ends in June, the end of June, and go July 1 around and not be in this kind of situation. Hopefully we never will be again for this, but there are other reasons that while it would be a pain for a little time, it's I think a prudent thing to do or to think about.
Yeah, although, I mean, we had no control over this timing thing, but I understand exactly what you're saying. It's always kind of struck me that, you know, we don't approve a budget until the third month of our year. It's kind of crazy that's the way it goes. So I can totally sympathize with what you're saying. I think it would make more sense to sort of be approving your budget for like the future, not the past, sort of, so to speak.
Had we had town meeting as scheduled and the budget had been approved and the world was in the state it is today, would your positions be different on the raises? Would you be doing them now if the budget had been approved?
Absolutely.
I mean, despite what's going on in the economy, I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would.
You know, you wouldn't.
I mean, it's a moot point, I guess, but it's, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to come up with, you know, I'm the guy that I'm the messenger. I'm the guy that will be talking to the highway guys and the you know, the police guys. And as you know, we've have certain employees that feel like they don't make enough money now. And so,
but those employees also have to realize that there are employees around us, state employees included,
right,
that do not get a pay raise every year. And there are people that are on retirement that do not get a COLA every year. And while we would all like to get 2.5% a year every year, that's not reality. And I would actually agree with Ron. I think in the state of what we're dealing with right now, I mean, we have a business that has closed. We know that there are self-employed people in this town that are reducing or have eliminated hours. I know that we've had contractors that have spoken to me personally that have had major jobs canceled this year based on what's going on. There's just this uncertainty. So like I said before, and I can't come up with a better term, this is a big crap sandwich and we all have to line up and take a bite of it, town employees included, and the needs of the many. I heard this in a movie once, so I hate to plagiarize, but I once heard the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And
sounds
I think
a little, sounds a little socialistic to me.
Oh, Ron.
we know where we are for the moment.
Whenever
we have a vote at town.
This is nothing personal.
And I think the guys, I don't, as long as everyone in every department is treated the same way, I think the guys in highway, the guys in police, down office, everybody will be fine with it and understanding.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a good crew here and they're working under some adverse conditions, but everybody's under adverse conditions right now.
And that's all of us are. There's not a person at this meeting or anywhere in town that is not suffering in some way from this. But the difference between somebody whose income stream is not being affected and somebody who's had it drastically reduced or lost it is huge. And I think we need to be aware of that for the reasons that Eric put out there.
I have a question. When we vote at town meeting to approve the budget and we've approved the amount for the raises, in the past, when we've done that at town meeting, is that retroactive back to January?
April 1.
April 1 would be when we regularly give our raises.
Okay, so we postponed our meeting, so we want it. Would we make it retroactive to April 1?
That's what I was proposing, yes.
Okay.
But certainly this is Rob speaking, I'm certainly willing to sort of put my faith in town meeting and sort of go with whatever they decide. You know, in 2 months, when we're scheduled to have our town meeting on June 13th, if the town meeting should decide and want to amend our budget to cancel the raises, then we would certainly respect the wishes of the town meeting and go with that. But I would think if we present the budget that we've currently got and the town approves that, then we're willing to give them their raises. I mean, that's...
Right, again, and I think the only reason for having a discussion is because you guys are in session and we are at that point in the year where we would be dealing with that very issue.
Yeah.
And so I think we've got clarity from you for tonight, what you want to do, and we'll do that. We'll hold right where we are on rates.
Any more members of the public have anything specific they'd like to say on this?
Not specific to this, but as I told Steve earlier, I have another meeting that I have to go to, so I'll leave the fate of the town in your capable hands.
Is it another Zoom meeting? You're going to be virtually logging off and going somewhere else?
Yeah, the school board is meeting to talk about success or problems with homeschooling and the technology involved and whatever, and I would like to know more about that. So,
very interesting. Yeah, the kid. I mean, obviously, there's some kids probably that don't have internet.
Yep, there are for sure.
Very interesting. Well, you'll have to let us know how that goes.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you,
Mike. Take care of yourself, Mike.
So thank you. You too.
The last thing, Rob, that I had on the must-do agenda was a request from our facility manager who has just joined us to talk about some work he wants to do on the Plainfield Town Hall and whether you guys want to authorize it or not authorize it.
All right, so let's give the floor to Brad Atwater, our facilities manager, for a little presentation on what he'd like to do.
Well, in light of current activities, I could easily, you know, see if there's a freeze on, or, you know, I'm happy to sit on this proposal, but in the normal course of events, this project of the Plainfield Town Hall, and we've had some foundation settling. We've sort of watched it for a year, did a little bit of grading 2 years ago. And I think it needs to have some temporary shoring put in while a plan is developed to figure out what the right thing to do is for that building. I've had a number of conversations with Steve over the last couple of years about a variety of issues with that building, but it all comes down to, you know, what is the mission of this building and how much do we invest in it? Do we can sort of bump along and fix things as they deteriorate, or we can take a larger bite and maybe fix some things for the longer term. You know, the building in general is in decent shape. And this bit of settling is something that has been going on since I've known anything about the building. It's gotten to the point where it's affecting some of the door swings, and it's settled approximately 2 inches in one area of the building. The general building has settled 2 inches from its high point in the center. That's not uncommon with old buildings, and part of that was observable back when they renovated the building in 95. So we have sort of a benchmark from there of what the condition was and what some of the concerns were as a reference point. And I think from my perspective, if it were a more normal world, I would get into there, do some cribbing, and then figure out with the select board how we want to define how much to do to this building and what to do about it. We've got some site issues. It's basically a very small site, not very much grade differential, but right now water is running into the building during certain conditions. And I've been asking to regrade the parking lot on the south side. That requires identifying some pins and some Chris Rollins or some surveyor work. And so it starts to mushroom a little. And so I'm looking for some feedback from the select board as far as what they'd like to do. And I just realized I'm yelling and the two of you are right here.
Well, it's good that everybody can hear Brad okay on online?
With or without the mics.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So Ron, I keep coming to you first because I can see you up on the screen. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, it's work that needs to be done. What are we talking about?
So magnitude is, I put a number on it at $1,000 to $3,000, and the reason for such a broad range is that you never really know until you get under there and start putting the cribbing in what it's going to take to make things move. And so in a wonderfully successful world, I could be in and out in a day, day and a half, and have a substantial portion of what I think is the sagging point reinforced. We try and lift it a little to correct some of the door swing rubbing issues, but it may be that the best we can do is just to get under it and take the load off so there's no longer pressing on the foundation and causing additional problems. The high side is if it looks like it wants to move, but it takes a couple more setups, or you have to put in another set of cribbing, maybe a piece of steel, just to rig it differently. And I could see you could chew up another day, day and a half in that scenario. And so that's why I gave the range.
And we're talking, you say cribbing. Yeah. I just want to make sure I got the language, but we're talking about shoring up a building. If you got some sag.
Yes.
Okay.
So you got a post and beam frame.
Yeah.
A beam runs around the perimeter of the building on top of a rubble wall. The basic problem with the building is that as a building of its age, it has a shallow foundation and frost works the soils around it differentially from the inside to the outside. And so you get lots of wear and tear on that rubble wall.
Yeah.
And over time, it just, the mortar fractures and the stone loosens, and this has got a soft spot and it needs to be firmed up. And so the first step is to get the weight off of it. If you can correct some of that drop, you try and go for it. But the trade-off is the more you move it, the more the plaster cracks on the inside. Mm. Now, the plaster's already cracked. We knew that when we repainted it back 3 or 4 years ago, and we discussed whether we should skim it at that point, and I was of the opinion that that wouldn't buy us much. The building was probably still in motion, and why invest in that? So we painted it. The paint held up for a decent year and a half or so, and then one more season, and you could start to see the hairline cracks. So I think I would, you know, go at it a little bit at a time, and given that it's close to me, I could get in under there and get it supported and leave the jacks in place. And if it seemed like it wanted to move, gently move it over some period of time. Building can still be used. And we just sort of see how much we could get. If it looks like it doesn't want to move at all, then at least we'd know it was firmed up and wasn't going to deteriorate more.
The basic question, Brad, yeah. Is that the front, I'll say looking at the building, the front left-hand corner where the worst yeah. of it is?
Yes. If you go yeah. over by where the water faucet is, you can see just to one side of that, it has dropped. And you can see there's actually a change in trim boards at the bottom of the wall, and you can see the dip. It's actually doesn't look as bad on from the outside in terms of the magnitude of the drop. But I put a laser on it a year and a half ago, set up on the inside of the building. And basically the high point is right about in the center of the front edge of the stage, and running around the perimeter, there's between an inch and a half and 2 inch drop on average, but in that one corner where the staircase is in that area, at that time, a 3.5 inch drop. And so.
I know it's always worse this time of the year. And I wondered if it's worth waiting until things dry out in the spring, whether that would make any difference.
So I wouldn't go in there right away anyway. There's still frost in the ground and no sense jacking off a frost because the frost will let go and the jacking will shift and there's no sense of it. Eric.
Brad?
Yes.
Have you looked at the reports that I gave you on the town hall
yep.
from Jim Gavin? And
yep.
were you able to get in touch with him or someone else at the State Division of Historical Architecture?
Yes, I was. I had a good conversation with him. He's not interested in re-upping for this project. He's semi-retired, and the rest of his time is committed, he said. But I did go through his reports, and that's how I know that there was a general crowning in front of the stage and that he had indicated that he didn't see that as a problem in terms of ongoing structural integrity. And so if you sort of take that and extrapolate, plus the fact that that's generally what happens with old buildings, is that their perimeters drop and the center stays high. And so that's where I come up with the most I'd be looking to jack that one portion would be 2 inches. But again, there's no magic to that. And you basically are jacking it a little, letting it rest, going around and seeing what kind of effect you did. You put a bunch of telltales on it so you know what you're getting as you move. And at some point it looks good enough and you're balancing the risk of going too far or creating more damage. And so you sort of go at it with a procedure. And at some point you say, that feels about right, and you stop. And if that's 1 3/4 inches, great. If it's 1/2 inch and that's all you can get without feeling like you're really pushing, that would be where I'd stop.
Hey, Eric. Let's hear from Sluckman Brand and see what he thinks.
Well, I mean, I'm reluctant to spend money on an old building, but the fact is my limited knowledge on structural issues is that they don't fix themselves.
Haven't found one yet.
And they need to be addressed. If that's a building we plan on keeping in our town, then I feel that structural repairs take priority over cosmetic repairs.
So, if you went with that piece, and again, you've got another month or more to think about it, or we can revisit it at a subsequent meeting. I just wanted to get it on your radar. But the general, as I see it right now, what I'd like, I think the shoring ought to get done this year if we can. I don't think it's the end of the world if you don't get to it, but it's at the point where I really feel like it might damage other things. So if that can be done this year, what I would then suggest is that we talk about, you know, what is the overall plan? Because we can fix that portion of the wall, but the reality is every time snow slides off that northern wall in the wintertime, it gets a mound of snow there, then anything that drips later flows into the building. And in the renovation, they put a vapor barrier on the ground, and that becomes a pond liner. And right now there are places that have a couple of inches of water, and in past years there's been even more. That water then continues to do damage because it pushes up against another wall that was part of the extension of the building. So there's a bunch of ripple effect. So I would not lead you to believe that shoring up this section of the wall, and even if we went ahead and just remortared that section of the stone, that is the final answer. I think there's a bigger discussion, and I just wanted to get on your radar and start that process going, because we can stabilize it, but we'll still have those same questions out there of what to do, what's it worth, what's the big plan, and I think it will involve some site grading, some tree removal, and probably some concrete work in the basement to eventually stabilize it so you aren't patching it every 3 or 4 years.
Okay, this is Rob. I'm going to say, based on the discussion we're having, I think we've got a little bit of time before we need to make a decision. So given that we're right in the middle of this sort of coronavirus thing, let's revisit this in about a month. And obviously, it's give us time to get the frost out of the ground, see what's happening.
I'd like to actually go down and take a look so you can show us.
Let's plan on doing that. We were talking about a field trip to the...
Right. Well, next week's we're back on meeting again. We'll meet here. But if you guys wanted to go down and see Ferry Hill in the town hall next week, we could do that before the meeting.
I wouldn't mind doing that. That'd be good.
Okay.
And we could all drive there in our own cars and not socially interact.
Right. And then we'll come back.
Ron, your thoughts on that? You have any issues doing a little field trip outside? Staying 6 feet away from each other? Is he muted?
I didn't mute him, but maybe he's muted himself. I didn't mute him.
I said I go out. I just don't go near anybody. So, yeah, that sounds all right.
Okay.
You guys want to take a time for that?
Maybe we could do a little field trip in a week and check the town hall and...
Ferry Hill Annex.
And the Ferry Hill Annex would be kind of a fun...
Say 5:30?
5:30 on Wednesday.
We might get here.
That's
a
the first? Is that the first?
It's the first Wednesday. Yeah, I think it is.
I think it's April. It's April Fool's Day, so it'd be a great day for us to get together.
Right.
All right, so maybe I'll be there, maybe I won't.
And I wanted to say, it looks like we have at least a couple of new people have joined us. Looks like Stephanie Schall is here.
Hi, guys.
Is that Vern Braswell? Hi, are you there?
He's
just say Vern on it, doesn't
he? I had to get off mute. Hello, everybody.
Hey, hello. Vern.
Hope everybody's being safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, likewise.
Yep.
All right. So
you want to switch? You want to move on to the COVID-19 discussion?
Yeah, we were.
I went in and talked to Stephanie, gave her a call and said, you know, asked her if she could attend the meeting via Zoom. Here she is. Stephanie, tell us where you're at.
Well, I have to say we live in a great, safe, you know, self-contained community. I'm really proud of our residents for really staying home and being careful. I've been logging on to the state webinar for health officers Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at noon. We have one coming up tomorrow. A lot of great information is being shared across the whole state. Steve, I think you're logging on as well. Mm-hmm. This is where we're at. I have had contact with the Plainfield School on a weekly basis, either with the school nurse, the school counselor, or Sandra Brake, the principal. At this time, all needs have been met for school supplies and for meals for the for those, especially with the free or reduced hot lunch program. Each week, the school is doing a survey to kind of survey again families' needs. As of right now, there has been no response for any needs. Again, we are in contact on a weekly basis to support the school. I'm continuing our weekend care packages to help fight 68 hours of hunger. I have 5 families right now in town, so I am still doing those. That may increase if we get more response from the school, but right now we have 5 families that are doing fine. I have made, over the last week, I guess it was Friday and Saturday of last week, 78 personal phone calls to senior citizens in town or those that I know that have an existing medical condition. Spent 3 to 5 minutes per phone call just letting them know that we're all in this together, that we do have people that are willing to do grocery shopping, run errands, pick up medication so that they can stay home and be safe. To date, I have made 7 trips for 7 different individuals and households to help provide those services. And everybody has been grateful. They say, you know, this is against our New England pride to ask for help, but thanks for being there. So I think that the response has been good there. My plan is to make those 78 phone calls each week, just so they have a personal connection. They have somebody to talk to. They may have questions. They don't know where to get the answers. Not that I have all the answers, but I could at least reassure them that, one, I could get them the answers, or two, give them the answer that they're looking for. As far as volunteers, a lot of people have been emailing me or calling me saying, I'm here. If you need anything, let me know. At this time, we are in a good shape. We don't need a whole army of volunteers because we really need to keep with our social distancing. We really need to keep ourselves quarantined. And if that need arises, I do have a list of people. Most of them are under the age of 60, so that's a good thing. Our Caring Neighbors group, those that are over 60, are willing to help, you know, make casseroles if we need to. I've been in contact with Don Jordan up at Singing Hills. His kitchen is ready to go if we need abundance of meals to be delivered. A local church has already made chicken soup that's in the freezer. So people have really come together. But the good thing, again, as I can't emphasize enough, is people are staying home. They're listening. They're doing what we've been asked to do, which is really good. In our last phone call with the state, it looks like New Hampshire is the 4th state in the United States that's really aggressive to fight this coronavirus by self-isolating and really quarantining and really, you know, staying away from people. So that's really good. Right now, the food pantry is, we're up and running. What we're doing is we're making pre-prepared care packages and doing curbside pickup. So each family that comes to the church, I walk outside with my gloves and mask on. I have 2 bags full of non-perishable items. We do have some frozen protein that we're offering. Everybody's getting a roll of toilet paper. And so people have been really appreciative of that. This past Saturday, we had the free cat and dog food. Our numbers were lower, but we have enough for another month. So April, we'll be able to give out free cat and dog food as well, because the Upper Valley Humane Society has stopped those mobile pantries for right now. So we're still up and running as far as the food pantry goes. So I'm actually headed to the New Hampshire Food Bank tomorrow to pick up another huge supply of non-perishables, so we have more. But really, we are in great shape in town. I've been in contact with our emergency medical director, Jim McCrariger. He's impressed with the different programs we have in place. And I think if we just keep our eye on the ball, we'll get through this together. We don't need to panic. We got to stay calm. We have the resources to do that in our community. So that's where I'm at. If anybody has any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Yeah, I do. Stephanie, sure. You continue to be a treasure for this community. Thank you.
Thanks.
We had talked about earlier in the meeting, there's at least one town, in the Upper Valley that is it takes a lot of effort, and it, if it's not useful to do it, I mean, I know you've got a good handle on, even prior to this event, as to who's out there and who needs what. Just dividing up the entire town so that there's somebody, you know, from a group of volunteers, somebody making a phone call or an email to every resident in the community to say, how you doing? Do you need anything? And wondering whether that's worth the effort to put out there, or yeah, whether you're confident that, you know, you've got a sense of that there's nobody in the community who's suffering in any way.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Ron, because one thing I have also done is talked with all of the pastors in town. So Christ Community Church, the Plainfield Baptist Church, Meriden Congregational Church, and the Meriden Baptist Church, they all have telephone trees, and they are calling their congregation, those within those congregation. Now, I mean, we could definitely divide up the community phone book, but we're such a small community. I think, you know, our safety net is there.
Okay.
I think people are reaching out. And one thing I am saying on, you know, my phone calls to the seniors is, you know, reach out to a neighbor. If you know of somebody that might be isolated, feeling alone, pick up the phone. We can still talk to neighbors. We just can't have tea with them, you know? And the other thing is, I said, if you don't have one of the local telephone books, let me know. I'll send it to you. I said, randomly, open up a page, pick out a name, you know, call them out of the, you know, call them out of the blue and see how they're doing. So yeah. I think we've got a good network going on right now. However, I think in maybe 2 weeks, when we're further into this, if we don't see light at the end of the tunnel, I don't think it's a bad idea if we do call, you know, every resident, not just the seniors, and check in on them. You know, we could split it up, the select board, Michelle, Steve, we could all take 25, 30 names, you know, and work down the tree. But I think of right now, I think everybody's doing okay. The other thing that's really great is, I meant to share this too, when I was making the personal phone calls to the seniors to see who might need help, I can't believe how many generational families we still have in town. You know, oh, well, my son's just down the road. You might not know him, but he's down the road and he's helping. So that it's a good close-knit community that we do have supports. So it's good.
Bev, I can see you putting your hand up. Bev, you have something to say?
Yeah, I wondered, Stephanie, do you have a list of all the folks in town that are over 65 or over 70?
I do not.
That would be something that Steve should be able to provide you from the inventories that we do every year.
Yeah.
And I know of two people just in our neighborhood that one goes to the Old South Church in Windsor and the other goes to the Catholic Church. And so they're not going to be hit by any of the churches in town.
There's actually a woman that does go to the Windsor Catholic Church that I've helped coordinate rides for. So she has been on my radar. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would hate to think somebody's being missed or somebody's being isolated and we don't know it.
Right. No, I think that's a great idea. Steve, if you can get me that inventory list, I'd be more than happy to go down through it and make personal phone calls.
Okay. I mean, I'm not sure we have the inventories. I don't know that Michelle maintains a list of all the residents. We don't track our residents in that way. But okay. But I will ask her tomorrow what our capabilities are.
Okay, great.
Further conversations. Let's see here. Stephanie, one question I have for you.
Sure.
We had Mike Sutherland on before he joined us. He was going off of our meeting to go on to a school meeting. Mm-hmm. And one of the comments that I had was, are there a lot of kids that are missing out on stuff because they don't have internet? What is your sense on that?
I did ask Sandra that. The one place that I know that they can't actually physically get internet is River Road. There was a family over there right now that doesn't have internet. And now that the libraries are closed, I'm not sure what they're doing. The young man is a junior at Lebanon High School, and he works at Panera part-time. So he was using Panera before he went, you know, clocked in to do his work. So I'm not sure where that's at. Again, as far as the surveys go, they have not received any issues regarding the Chromebooks that they've lent out and getting internet access.
Okay. Now, I know the libraries are closed, but I'm guessing that the Wi-Fi is still hot.
I was going to mention that.
If they you could probably sit in the parking lot.
Actually, that was in one of the emails from the library that said it's obviously not the best situation, but it's doable.
Yep. So I can pass that along to Sandra, but as of right now, she said there isn't any issues with the internet.
Okay.
I do know that they were doing some take-home packets as well, so it wasn't all online, which was good.
Okay.
Has the school made any provisions for kids to use the labs at the school or no?
I haven't heard anything. Nobody's allowed in that building as far as I'm concerned, or I understand. I think they're doing more of the hands-on science projects out in, you know, our beautiful nature. So or they're doing baking projects and making their own homemade volcanoes, you know, with vinegar and that kind of stuff, baking soda. But nobody's going into those labs. That building is shut down.
Well, I know Mike is laser focused on that, on the issue of making sure that there are no kids being left behind. And like I said, Rob was saying, he left this meeting to go to that one. So he'll have a report to us, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
So I'd like to have a discussion, given the governor's order today regarding the non-essential employees staying home, and this whole basically shelter-in-place order that he put out today. It was just reported this afternoon. What are the other two selectmen? Start with you guys. What are your thoughts on our employees of the town, namely our highway guys, Steve and Michelle? Obviously, the library, we've shut that down. There's nobody working at the library.
Well, no, they still are working. I mean, the employees, I mean, I think it certainly would be a shock to highway if you said to them they're not to report to work unless there's inclement weather. I mean, we have more work than we can do, and we have a crew that is, I think, better served when they're working than when they're not working in terms of things. And so, I mean, our expectations were that we were going to continue along. We've limited exposure here in the office. Rich doesn't have a lot of public exposure with the crew. They are doing work. Mm-hmm. And obviously PD has to stay. I mean, they're PD.
Yeah, I would definitely say the police would be essential.
Well, I'd be able to stay also to do my food pantry and my emergency home visits if need be.
I mean, I'm sure municipalities are on the governor's list.
Oh, absolutely.
We are government.
What I will tell you, though, is that Hanover Highway, unless it was snow on Monday, they've been home. They've been furloughed. Lebanon Highway, same deal. The only, from the public works standpoint, the only people that are not furloughed are the utility people. So it's the water and sewer, which are considered absolutely essential. So,
I mean, my recommendation would be that you, like Stephanie said, we're going to be evaluating this every week. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the very least, you've got to give those guys some notice. And give Richard some notice because he's going to have projects that he's working on and things that he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're spending time in our town right now, and we all are, it is very quiet during the week. And Highway is on the cusp of being able to really start some good work and get some things done. Mm-hmm. Unless we think we are somehow adding to the problem, I think we want those guys out working.
Well, Steve, here's a question. I have no idea how the individuals in the highway department are taking this. And as Stephanie said, you know, the state's been trying to do a good job with the, you know, the whole idea is to, as you all know, flatten the curve, slow the spread. It's going to get worse. And the question is over what period of time, and trying to keep it from being an overwhelming issue. And you know, there are people who say, you know, I don't care if I get the flu, it's just the flu. And, you know, either a sign of, you know, their own bravado or lack of caring because they aren't in a risk group. But the whole idea is to stop the community spread. So I wonder about, are you comfortable having a talk with Rich and the guys over at the highway saying, there's work to do. We'd like you to keep doing it, but it has to be in a manner that's different than usual. Not have two people sitting together in a truck, not having people sitting together at the lunch table. And if they can't do that, then we've got to relook at whether to just send them home, because the whole point is not to punish anybody, but is to prevent the spread. And there are ways to minimize that, as we all know. So Yeah, how do you feel about having that talk?
I'm very comfortable with that, Ron. I'm very comfortable with that. And further, it's an opportunity to at least give them a sense that that a furlough of some kind, a shortened work week, may be coming in the future, depending on where this goes. I mean, it plays into all of the stuff we talked about earlier. I mean, if we are starting the Meriden-covered bridge the end of next week, the highway crew is needed to remove the deck. That's part of our responsibility. But I am happy to have that conversation with Richard and his crew to let people know that they have the full support of the town. We haven't talked about whether we'd be compensating them or not while they were home, but also that we would want them to, you know, to self-quarantine if they've had exposures, all of the things that we're all talking about in our daily life, but also to give them some notice that it is a possibility in the future. If we just change course tonight 180 degrees, they would be very surprised and would have had no time to prepare.
The other thing, Steve, I just want to bring up, for liability reasons, you may give them the opportunity, if they don't feel comfortable to come to work because of all of this, this is a good way for them to get out voluntarily, because you have to offer them that. When we had to close our dental practice, it was really hard to put our team members and family members on furlough. But by offering them the compassion and saying, you know what's out there? We're not mandating yet, but if you don't feel comfortable coming to work, know that it's okay.
Right. We have been having those discussions on Monday mornings, and we'll continue to. I think that's right.
So that definitely raises a very interesting question. So if we're gonna tell them they have to stay home, then I would think we would have to continue paying them. But if they
Not necessarily. You can put them on furlough so that they could get unemployment. Mm-hmm. That's what we did with our employees.
That's okay. Exactly. Stephanie's exactly right. If you furloughed them, even if it was for a partial week, let's say that you wanted them to work 2 days a week and be off 3 days a week, they could collect unemployment for the 3 days that they're not working.
Yes.
Okay.
And what we did with our company in good faith, because we hope this is just temporary, is we're still paying for their health insurance premiums.
Yep.
To show good faith.
Go ahead.
Something you might consider is a strategy. If you had critical work that needed to get done throughout the summer, you could consider half the crew at a time. And that way you're sort of holding them in reserve and reducing the contact. Now, it all depends on what they're doing in their off time. But the idea that you wouldn't get the crew, all the whole crew out there, because if the sickness went through the crew, you'd have some in reserve to come in once it was cleaned up or ready to go in other areas or something like that.
Bev, as our HR expert in the meeting, if they voluntarily stay home, can they collect unemployment?
No.
Okay. So it really
you would have to decide whether you're going to furlough them or lay them off. And you would have to fill out the paperwork that the reason why. I mean, the good news is, from everything that I'm reading, is that both the funds in New Hampshire and Vermont for unemployment, the trust funds, are very well funded, so that it's not going to affect your unemployment rate going forward. And we think that some of the other packages that are out there will also help towns and businesses to fund the unemployment. So it's a hard decision. It's a very hard decision.
You know, Bev, if whether they would, towns don't pay the tax, we pay the benefit.
Okay, all right.
And so I don't know if they would just simply pass that cost back to the town, or if in fact, because of the extraordinary circumstances, the fund would cover that cost.
I would expect that the fund would cover the cost.
But I mean, I would suggest that since we're meeting again next week, I will begin some of these discussions with Richard, and that we'll check back. He will be here at the next meeting, couldn't be here tonight.
I like Ron's idea of a policy that no more than one person per vehicle for now. I know it's an environmental issue, but for right now, they shouldn't be sharing vehicles. If we can limit the sharing of other equipment as well, I mean, one guy running the backhoe, that kind of thing. I think that if we can socially distance, can they set up the break room, kind of like what we've got here? Everybody's at least 6 feet away from each other.
That's a stretch.
Yeah. But they could rotate through.
Okay. You know.
I think the most important thing is that I stopped over last week and spent their lunch break with them to do a morale check. And I think morale's good. You know, they voice their concerns. I made it very clear to them that if anybody needed to adjust their hours to be at the grocery store when it opened with their spouse or significant other, then work it out with your department head. The select board would took the privilege of speaking for the select board, say we would support that. But I think what Stephanie, to follow what Stephanie said, putting the ball in their court, let them know that that option's out there, that if any of them don't feel comfortable, then this is our option to furlough. But difficult time, especially with the bridge project coming up.
Yeah.
You know, so morale checks and let them know what their options are if they don't feel comfortable coming to work.
And I know we've had a discussion for fire. You know, they don't go to, I don't know what's that, it's changed, honestly. Yeah, but everybody's still live, all the thumbnails.
I think what's happened is Helen Kohler is sharing the screen. So Helen, if you could get off screen sharing, you can still be at the meeting. But we're all looking at your screen with a big blank in the middle.
Okay, Helen, we love you.
Helen, slide down to the bottom and go where it says share screen, where it's green, and click on that.
You hear us? Helen.
So we'll, I think.
Okay, yeah, so we are going to be meeting a week from last night. So Wednesday of next week on the 1st of April, we're going to definitely revisit this, kind of keep our eyes on it.
I'm going to push the meeting out to 6:30 to give us a full hour to spend time at the Plainfield Town Hall and in the Gravel Annex. Okay. But it will be noticed as a 6:30 meeting here at Town Hall, and we'll publicize the Zoom number and all of that stuff as we've done tonight.
Yeah. Okay.
So unless there are other things, that's what I've
unless got. There's other things. Anybody else have any last minute things they want to bring up for us?
Yeah, can I bring up one thing to Stephanie?
That's Vern. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Stephanie, you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you. And one thing I do want to bring up is you are talking to the elders. I see on the news where these scammers are taking advantage of the elders. If you talk to them, that you forewarn them. Like, I don't know, they're taking advantage with all these checks coming out and everything. It's terrible how they do this kind of thing.
It is. I just got an alert on my phone. Anybody that's on Cornish Connect right now, there's a bad scam going right on with Cornish, with the town clerk or the tax collector saying she's on vacation, send her gift cards. Well, she's not. It's a big spoof. They hacked her email. So, yeah, you're right. People are taking advantage of this horrible situation. So I will, in my next call this week, I will remind them.
Cool. Thank you.
By and large, it's, you know, I read somebody said today that the good people get better and the bad people get worse. And there's more of the good ones. So, but yeah, we need to be vigilant and teach other people to do so.
That's the other thing too, that you guys.
That's a social attitude, Ron.
The other thing that I wanted to mention too is some people have been contacting me about the 2020 census, how people are supposed to come to the houses to do interviews. A couple seniors asked me about that because they've been getting postcards. I told them not to let anybody into their house, reschedule it for a different time down the road. There's no emergency for this census.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you everybody for joining us. I think we're gonna call it a night. Get home, get into the safety of our homes. Seems to have worked pretty well. Any comments about the Zoom meetings? You could send an email to Steve or any of us. Try to make this even better next week. I think we will do the on-site tour next week of the town hall in Plainfield and the Ferry Hill Annex building down by the gravel pit.
Right. We'll
we'll come back here.
Right. Although we're not looking to have large gatherings, but we'll start at the annex at 5
30.
Right, and so you're welcome to, like, Ron could go back to his house and log in. Everybody could go their respective webcams, I guess.
And if you're looking for the meeting, it will be on Zoom, and it'll be at 6:30 next Wednesday night.
All right.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, well, everybody.
You too.
Right.
You
too. All
right.
Stay safe. Bye-bye. Motion to adjourn from Eric. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Taking it out. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Me too.
It's down in the lower right. Isn't there a stop meeting?
I'm going to shut the recording off if I could. It kind of all looks different suddenly.
Jesus. You just make sure the phone's on off.
Oh, it just went to heck. Let's see. Here we go.
Right, is there a stop end meeting somewhere, isn't there?
There is. But I'm not sure where.
Maybe you just close each of the
pick that big X up in the upper right corner. That should kill it.
Kill it all then.
Not necessarily.
Show meeting controls right there.
There it is, down in the lower right. See it? And red. There you go.
End for all.